Hey everybody, this is Alan Fine. I'm here with Brett Plotz, the field operations team leader for Inside Japan, which is part of Inside Travel Group. They hosted me and took me all around Tokyo and Kyoto. Today we're going to talk about just Tokyo, and this is Insider Travel Report. Brett, thank you for talking to us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
No, it's great because I really want to do a nice little dive into Tokyo, the inside Japan way. So, Brett, the first thing that we did, we got up bright and early and we went out to see the Imperial Palace. And what struck me was just how it juxtaposed the modern city, the ancient and the modern right there. Can you tell us what we're looking at?
Well, it's definitely what people, that's their image of Japan, especially of Tokyo. You know, they either have an image of it being just futuristic, you know, people kind of riding, you know, bike, you know, motorcycles like Akira, or it's people living in thatched houses. But Tokyo actually does that really well. And the fact that it does have a contrast of the older part of the city, and then they then and then the cutting edge part. And the good part about the Imperial Palace is that it does kind of adhere to that old part, and that you are kind of stepping back in a time when you do enter the Imperial Palace grounds.
Right.
And so right now it's just you're entering the you're in one of the gates. There are numerous gates kind of surrounding the actual Imperial Palace compound itself.
I was intrigued with the design. The number of entrances was a number of ways to capture your enemy as they're trying to get in, true?
True. I mean, many of the castles, almost all the castles in Japan had choke points, right? Where
Choke
if there,
points. Got it.
yeah, there are some castles where the entryways are about they only are two samurai together, shoulder to shoulder could fit through, and that's it. And so that's why they could only fit two samurai. You just pick them off
Right.
with rifles or with arrows.
Right.
And some of those stones you can see are original and some are not. It has been very much been reconstructed throughout the years. The castle itself, I say castle because it was a castle previous to previous to 1603 is when the castle started being built by a man named Tokugawa, who was very, very important in Japanese history. He basically had his castle. He moved his capital of Japan from Kyoto, where the emperor lived, to Tokyo, which is where he had his base of power. Because the saying was that if you had the access to the if you control the army, you controlled the country. Obviously, the emperor was always in power. He's been in power. Japan actually has the longest unbroken line of imperial power in world history. And so in 1600s, Tokugawa Ieyasu, he basically controlled, he won a giant battle called the Battle of Sekigahara in 1600. And gained control of the army, which meant he had control of the country. He was the de facto leader of the country. And so what he did was he wanted to be as far away from the emperor as possible. Still love the guy, you know, still a god, a living god, right? But wanted to be kind of farther away from, I guess, daddy's eyes. And so he moved his capital to a little sleepy, swamp town called Edo, which is now Tokyo, and that's where he built his castle in 1603. And he was in charge. His family was in charge for about 250 years until about 1868, when the Emperor Meiji came back into power. That's why it's known as the Meiji Restoration. And from there, anyway, that castle was then destroyed and was rebuilt into the Imperial Palace. And the Imperial Palace itself then was there until it was destroyed in World War II in the 1940s and then was reconstructed to what you see today. Anyway, my whole point is some of the castle walls are still original and some are not, but there are almost no buildings there which are original.
So tell us about this fish.
So fish are, well, it's a mythical fish. So fish are known to evoke water. And so because Japanese buildings, you know, back in the day, even now, are made of wood. It was meant to basically guard off against fire. And so many castles and temples as well will have fish at the very top, which again kind of protects it from the very real threat of fire because Tokyo, even Tokyo itself, has been destroyed a couple times with fire. And so fire was also was very, very it evoked a lot of fear in Tokyo and in Japan at large.
This was interesting. We were told that the ornamentation was related to the family.
That's right. And so the a lot of the family crests, especially the Tokugawa family crest, which is the three-leaf hollyhock, that's Tokugawa Ieyasu I spoke about before. A lot of family crests, you know, they stamped everything on them because, you know, why wouldn't you, right? Tokugawa was very he's very powerful, and so he wanted to stamp, literally stamp his name on everything that he had control of, which was most of the country. And so the three-leafed hollyhock you'll see on a lot of buildings, that just meant that that was Tokugawa territory. A lot of other strong, powerful samurai families will have their own crests stamped throughout the rest of the country.
And then we came up to this turret.
Yep, Yagura. Yagura is basically they're lookout towers, basically, right? They're kind of built on the corners of palaces or castles to look out for enemy forces.
And then we
You see
saw
that fish
the.
up there now? You can see that fish up on the top.
This was interesting. I'm about to watch Kushinkara, and I watched Keanu Reeves in 47 Ronin. So this was the
Awesome story.
spot that this happened. You want to tell us about it?
So yeah, the 47 Ronin, the story itself is one of the most told, if not the most told story in all of Japanese media. You have kabuki plays have been made, you have lots of movies, television shows, plays, books. It's been fictionalized, especially by Keanu Reeves, as you've seen. That movie came out about 10 years ago, but it is definitely one of the most famous stories told throughout Japanese history. Not so much historically significant, but culturally significant. The 47 Ronin is one of the easily one of the best stories to learn about in Japan.
Well, because it deals with honor, it deals with the revenge for treachery, and then even though you did what you thought was right, it was there was still a wrong, and then you're told you've got to commit seppuku.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, it deals with Bushido, right? It deals with the way of the samurai and the honor of the samurai. Yeah, for sure. And like I said, it goes to show that no good deed goes unpunished.
Yes, that's a great analogy there. So anyway, we walked around there were big open areas in there, which I assume when it's cherry blossom time, it's spectacular.
It really is. And that is one of the best things about the Imperial Palace grounds, is the fact that it is connected to a park, but it's a massive green space in the city. And Tokyo doesn't really have a lot of green space, like maybe a lot of other cities in Europe or even in America. But that is, it's a great way to kind of just walk around nature in the middle of Tokyo.
And as an ugly American, I'm thinking of Central Park, where we look up from trees and see a modern city. And so in Manhattan has Central Park, and that this felt like home to me.
Exactly. It's
Anyway,
a nice oasis in the middle of the city.
so then we hopped a cab and we didn't want to miss the fish market.
Tsukiji Fish Market is, well, now I guess considered the old fish market, and that the new fish market moved over to a place called Toyosu, which is just across the bay. But Tsukiji Fish Market is what people think of when they think of a fish market. It's been around since the early 1900s. It was at one point the largest wholesale fish market in the entire world. I believe it is still now, but again, that's the new Toyosu one. Historically, there's always been an inner market, which is when people think of the tuna auctions, if you know what those, if you've heard of those, where they basically all the fishermen will bring their biggest catches of the day, and they'll auction them off to wholesale restaurants. And that happened very early in the morning, 3, 4 in the morning, and then those fish would be taken to the restaurants or to a factory, and they'll be basically served that day. Very, very fresh fish. That inner market has always been around. The outer market is what sprung up around the inner market. The outer market is where you can find vegetables and some of the best knives in the world, and you can find, of course, other types of seafood. They've always kind of had this relationship, the inner market and the outer market. The inner market is what moved across the bay to Toyosu. So that meant that hollowed out a space there. So the outer market still exists, and it's definitely worth going to as you went to, but it is slowly disappearing, which is very, very sad. And so I tell people and inside Japan, go there now because it won't be there in 10 years. And so it has an actual market feel to it, which is, as you can see in the pictures, which is, it's a really great atmosphere to just walk through. And eat your way through. I mean, you have thousands of different types of seafood stuff that I don't even know what it is. You have all kinds of different food you can eat as you kind of walk through. It's a fantastic place to head to, but I do recommend not going after 10 a.m.
Because
Most stuff closes. They get sold out of their food, which is very, very fresh, and then it just closes up. So I recommend having a sushi breakfast there early, early.
got it. Got it. We then went to lunch. And
Yes.
tell us about this style of restaurant and
So
dining.
you went to what's called a monja. So monjayaki is a lot of people, you know, they think Japanese food, they think sushi, they think ramen, right? They think maybe tempura. Monjayaki is one of those that no one really thinks about, and maybe for good reason. And the fact that some people love it and some people hate it. But basically, what it is, it's a bunch of ingredients mixed up on a hot plate, right? With batter and with honestly, you name it. It can be cheese. It's a lot of fish, you know, fish roe. It's a lot of cabbage. And it's basically all kind of mixed together and then cooked into a kind of, some people think it looks like maybe a puddle of maybe just food is what it is. But basically it has this cool history, the fact that it you know, a lot of this kind of food, like okonomiyaki, which people have heard of, is gained popularity after World War II, when most of Japan had nothing. And so you took what you had at hand and you mixed it up into a big bowl, you poured it out onto a hot plate, and that's what you had for dinner. And so nowadays it's been kind of elevated into more of an art form, I guess. But monjayaki is definitely something everyone should try once. Did you enjoy
Yes,
it?
I loved it. My wife was iffy, but I loved it. It was definitely, well, look, I went for something different. I wanted to taste the local, and this was very local.
This is very local. So yeah, I mean, you're lucky in the fact that I see right now that maybe they're cooking it for you. Typically you don't. You cook it yourself. And so you got the 4-star treatment, I think it looks like there.
Yes, we did. Okay. When we left, belly's full. We were pleased to be here.
Yes, this is Sensoji. This is Sensoji temple. It is in the Asakusa district, which is one of the oldest parts, is the biggest draw. It's the most visited temple in Tokyo. It's the oldest founded temple in Tokyo, founded in the 7th century. So over 1400 years ago, this temple was founded. It is a temple that's dedicated to the goddess Kannon, the goddess of mercy and benevolence. So the goddess Kannon is who's the main worshipped god there. This is the main building of Sensoji. You can see up top there, you can see the murals on the right and the left is the goddess Kannon, and on the middle is a drawing of a dragon. The dragon is very important to Sensoji, and the fact that dragons are, you know, they have in the West, they have kind of a bad reputation. The fact that, you know, they kidnap princesses and they destroy villages, right? You're thinking of Smaug, and you're thinking of all the famous literary dragons that we have in the West. In the East, in China and Japan, dragons are good. They bring luck. They protect things. They're basically, they evoke water again, which protects against fire. And so the dragon here is kind of the goddess Kenon's messenger. And the fact that the dragon would come from heaven to earth and bring messages and kind of help protect the earth. And so that's why you see various dragons motif, a dragon motif at Sensoji itself.
Speaking of which,
Speaking of which, you see here, this is again a dragon where you can purify yourself. One way to purify yourself, there's a couple different ways. One is with smoke, and one is with water. This is water, and so typically there'll be ladles here, but this one doesn't have ladles. After COVID, their ladles are pretty much gone. But typically, you purify yourself, and there's a very specific way to do it. You're gonna purify one hand, and then the other, and then put a little bit in your hand, purify your mouth, and purify your hand again, and then make sure the rest of the water drips down the ladle handle before you put the handle down. There's a
oh,
whole
I
different way
see.
to do it.
I
Yeah.
see. You said there was a story about this.
There is a story about this. So this is the Asahi company's headquarters. If you know Asahi, Asahi is famous for their beer. Right,
Right.
they do a lot of other drinks in Japan, but of course, famous for their beer. They're a distributor. Both these buildings here, you see the building on the left, which is the kind of has a spiky top and a yellow body. That's actually meant to evoke. That's meant to resemble a draft beer. It has the
Right.
foam on the top. It has the
Right.
yellow body, right?
Right. Right.
And then the other building, which is the squat building with kind of the interesting sculpture on top of it. That's also part of the Asahi building complex. And so you have these two buildings. One looks like a beer, is quite tall. The other one is small and squat and has this statue on the top. So those buildings are very, very famous in Tokyo. The one on the left is one of the most beloved buildings in Tokyo. The one on the right, the small squat one, is one of the most hated buildings in Tokyo. And so that's supposed to be a flame on the top of that building. Some people Japanese refer to it as the golden turd, as some as the
Yeah.
golden carrot, right? But that it's supposed to be a flame. I mean, if you squint, you can see the one on the left kind of looks like a beer.
Yeah. If you have enough beers, you
If you
can
have
see.
enough beers, that building looks a lot like a beer.
Yeah. So then we were excited to head west on the subway. And that
Yes.
subway system, or the eventual goal is the busiest crosswalk in the world. But we had to get there. And so look at this, the subway.
Yeah, so I'm going to guess you took the Ginza line. The Ginza line starts in Asakusa, where you were, and it ends in Shibuya, where you're going. And so the Ginza line is one of the one of the oldest subway lines in Japan. It started off in the very early 20th century, and it's a great way to travel, right? It's cheap.
Yep.
They're on time. People kind of stick to themselves. You can typically get a seat if it's not rush hour. It's a great way to get around Tokyo itself. I mean, Tokyo, if you look at a map of Tokyo, you look at the train lines, you include the overland trains, you include the subways and the kind of the private trains and the trams and stuff, and it's like a spaghetti dinner, but it all makes sense. I might be biased. I've lived in Japan for a very long time, but I think Japan has the greatest transport system in the world.
And clean, like everything else.
Very clean, on time. They put a lot of money and effort into the infrastructure, and it definitely shows.
Yep. Now, as we reached the station, we were privy to this overlooking window. And so we were able to witness what we were about to experience on the ground. Because
Right. So actually, a really good kind of a secret spot that a lot of people they get off the train, they make a beeline right for ground level, and they want to participate in the Braveheart-like world's busiest crossing. But you did a great thing, and the fact that you came with NZ Japan, we have these different spots that we can show you. You can get an overview of what you're going to see and give you context. That's what we do. We give you context, and so you can kind of see it from above a little bit to see what it is you're about to do. Yeah.
And so you have some stats.
Some stats. Almost, I mean, millions of people per day come through here. This is the reason why they come through this in particular is because Shibuya Station is a hub station. It has a dozen train lines that come through and out of it. It's a hub to get through to get back to the east if you're going back to the east, or to leave and go even further west where I live, kind of outside of Tokyo. And so that's why it's been like this for a long time. But the funny thing is 100, 120 years ago, you're looking at tea fields.
Right. So then we went down and we learned of this true story about a dog that's
This is
being
the true
honored here.
story, of Hachiko. Hachiko was a dog who lived almost exactly 100 years ago now. And the story goes, it's a really great story and a famous story in Japan, which has been actually made into movies, even abroad. I think Richard Gere made a movie
Yep.
about this back in the day. But Hachiko is a dog who was owned by a professor here in Japan. And he would him and the dog would walk to the Shibuya train station together every morning, and then the dog would basically would see him off, and he'd go to work at the school, and he'd come back, and the dog would have waited for him, and then they'd walk home together. They did that for years, but unfortunately, one day, the professor he actually died at school. He died at work, and so he never returned back. But Hachiko the dog waited for years and years for her master to come back. And everybody in Shibuya knew this was the situation at the time, and so they would feed Hachiko. They would make sure that Hachiko was taken care of as the dog waited for the master. And eventually, Hachiko died, and then was reunited with her master over at his grave. But it's a story that really illustrates loyalty, and I guess how the Japanese kind of look at that and that in that way. But it's a very sad story, but also a very kind of uplifting story. Hachiko's statue itself is easily one of the most popular places to meet people around the city. If you say meet me at Hachiko, they know exactly where to meet you at Hachiko Station at the statue itself. So
That's great. So now we're after we passed Hachiko, we were going to actually cross the street. We had no reason to cross the street except to follow the chicken or whatever to
there's
cross
no
the
reason to
road.
cross. You cross a few times and then you go back into the station, really.
Yeah, so it's you just want to be a part of the throng. You want to be a
You
part of
do.
what's happening.
You do. And honestly, it is. You see everybody with their cameras and taking videos as they go across.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
it is quite a long light, actually. You can kind of stop in the middle of the street. You can take your 360-degree photo and
Yeah.
you can move on. But it is, yeah, there's no reason to walk around there, but you kind of have to. It's just something that you just do.
But I wonder what percentage of people are actually going someplace they have to be, and then what percentage are just crossing like we were.
I think you'd be surprised. I guess a very low percentage of people are actually going somewhere.
Right. I found the vending machines to be innovative, colorful, and astounding.
Oh, vending machines. Japan has mastered the vending machine. I mean, talking about stats, I mean, there are 4.5 million vending machines around the country, which is insane. That's more than I think the population of New Zealand. I mean, I grew up in a town of 300 people, but there are so many vending machines everywhere. I mean, there's vending machines at the top of Mount Fuji, there's vending machines next to my house. I've bought D batteries, I've bought cassette tapes, I've bought hot dogs. I once bought an entire suit out of a vending machine just to
Are
say
you
that I could.
kidding?
No, I bought an entire suit out of a vending machine to say that I could. And it was awful. It fit horribly. It was made of basically tissue paper. But I did it. I did it, Alan. I bought a
And
suit.
does it come out, and do you buy it in, is it one transaction, or did you have to do the suit and the top
I
and
did.
the
I bought, it
sport
was
coat
pants, jacket, cufflinks,
all
shirts.
once?
No, it was all separate.
Separate.
Because,
Oh, à la carte.
Alan, maybe you just need that shirt. I don't
Yeah,
know.
right. So we walked from the Shibuya crossing and went to this wonderful cat alley. Tell us about this, please.
Yeah, you went over. This is Shinjuku East Station, the east exit of Shinjuku Station, and it's a famous billboard which has only been around the last couple of years or so. And yeah, it's very trippy, right? It's all 3D, and the reason why they do it, right? Because they curved it around that building, and that cat is thrown into lots of different situations throughout the year. Depending on what season it is now, it's talking, apparently. I'm not quite sure what it's doing. But
Yeah.
then they also change it as well. Like there'll be celebrities who'll be on there too, but the cat is definitely the main star. The cat will be around. Well, I see the cat will wear different clothing. It'll do a lot of different things throughout the week and throughout the months and throughout the year. And a lot of people just stop and just take pictures and videos of this cat.
But also in the surrounding, oh, look, there's a cat cafe right over a pet
Right
shop.
underneath it is a cat cafe. Cat cafes are very popular in Japan. Animal cafes are very popular in Japan, and that's because a lot of most apartments and a lot of even condos don't allow pets of any kind. And so if you do want to go and pet a cat for a half hour, you can go to a cat cafe. You can rent a cat for a half hour. You can feed the cat. You can have a drink or two, and then you can leave. It's all the pluses and none of the minuses of having a pet. You don't have to clean up after the pet. And they have many different animal cafes. There's dog cafes, cat cafes, owl cafes, you name it. There's mini pig cafes. They're
Oh my God.
around.
At that point, we were pretty tired, and we had to call it a day.
Sure,
But
sure.
and in order to do this, we had to catch cabs and subways, and we did as much as we could in that day. But inside Japan really made a difference.
Oh, thanks. I mean, what we do is basically we add context to trips. You can absolutely do Japan by yourself, But we're there to add context, and honestly, we're there to save you time. Like you said, taxis and train the right trains, and just the most efficient way to get around places, that's what we do. You think about if you're in Tokyo and you leave your hotel at 9 in the morning, you start thinking like, well, where should I go? How should I get there? You've already wasted time. And we have so little time anyway, on vacation, and that I would feel awful if any time was kind of wasted. And so you're right. That's what we try to do. We try to save you time so you can fit the most you can into your time in Japan.
So now we're going out to 126,000 travel advisors.
Okay.
How can they learn more?
You can go to our website, insidejapantours.com, and you can get connected with somebody who can help you out to plan the vacation of your lifetime. Because honestly, when I go back to America and other places and I say, oh, I live in Japan, they say, almost everybody said, oh, I've always wanted to go to Japan, right? It's never one of those places where it's like, well, that's next on the list. It's always like, oh, I loved karate as a kid, or, oh man, Nintendo, remember that? And there's always a reason to come to Japan, or sushi, or samurai, or ninja. Doesn't matter what it is, there's always something pulling people here. Japan will always be cool. And why not pull that trigger? I mean, Japan right now, this is the place to be. It's the place to be for sure. Otherwise, you might not get here. And if you do get here, we keep that in mind, the fact that this is probably the trip of a lifetime. And again, I would feel awful if I couldn't make a great trip into a fantastic one. And that's what we do at Inside Japan.
That's great. Well, Brett, thank you for talking to us about Tokyo. We're going to talk to you soon about Kyoto. So everybody come back and watch that one. And thank you again. And this is Alan Fine for Insider Travel Report.